Hi, before you hop on to this week's episode, I just thought to share something exciting with you all. So as you know, we've been exploring surrogacy or surrogates in this month's theme. And as a way to just build support around this topic, I would like to share that as part of our missions to demystify, guide, and protect families on the surrogacy journey, we are now offering both personalized support and a safe community space. So it's called HOPES, which stands for Helping Our People Expand Safely. And during this time, we'll provide culturally grounded coaching, community resources, including surrogacy and CRBA. CRBA, for those who are not familiar with that, is a consular report of birth abroad. This is when you give birth to a child as a U.S. citizen outside of the U.S. and you want to bring the child back. And I know this can also extend to other countries as well. And so if you need some support around how to get that done, paperwork, getting ready for the interviews, we can provide that support. So basically, HOPES is just helping with global family building. Our team combines lived experience and professional expertise to guide families through surrogacy and CRBA processes and even infertility with care, dignity, and cultural understanding. There's an intake form to fill to get started. But you can email us on talktomo@mosibu.com or check out the show notes on how to get started. Thank you and enjoy the show. Hello, dear listeners. Before we dive into this powerful episode, I just wanted to share something important with you. For the privacy of our guests on this episode, we had to make several edits to remove identifying details during post-production. Consequently, you may notice that some parts of the conversation feel a bit disjointed, but that's because as a podcast host, my core value is always to prioritize the comfort and safety of my guest over the continuity of the message. Despite this edit, this is a story myself and the guest felt that needed to be told still, because it's one about hope, about courage, and the complex realities of parenthood through surrogacy. And while I have the privilege of sharing parts of my life publicly, not everyone can or should be expected to do the same. The message here is this, I believe. Surrogacy remains a deeply personal and often misunderstood topic in our society. It's a journey filled with joy and sacrifice, but also with stigma and complex emotions. So if some parts of this episode don't flow perfectly, please know why. More importantly, know that behind every edit of this episode is a story of love, boundaries, and the right to privacy. With that said, please let's honor our guest's courage and wisdom as we step into this important conversation, one that I cannot wait to share with you all. Let's begin. And now, enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. This is a story that I'm so happy to share today. It's part of our part of the series that we've been doing on surrogate. You know, suro because you need patience to really go through this. And today on the podcast is a guest whose story I think embodies resilience, grace, and unwavering strength. She's a mother through surrogacy, and she joins us to share her deeply personal and transformative journey through infertility. Together, we'll explore the emotional highs and lows she's faced, the challenges of navigating surrogacy in Nigeria, and even just the path that led to parenthood. And through her story, we hope to shed more light on the realities of infertility, the misconceptions about surrogacy, and the hope it offers to many aspiring parents. And I just want to give a special thank you to this guest for today. I mean, I met her through the clinic that we used in Nigeria. And I'll just say that the level of information she's provided, the accuracy of information she's provided, and just her heart is one that I think is so golden that if everyone were like this, I think we'll have a better world. She doesn't know me from anywhere, but the way she's taken me under her wings and really helped with our journey, I can't even put into words just how much she means to me. So everyone, please join me in welcoming Mrs. to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so honored. Thank you so much. It's so wonderful to have met you. I just thank God I've made that possible.
Yes.
I like to meet people, you know, like you, you know, so I'm very inspired by you and what you know, and what you do. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you. We can keep doing this back and forth. Thank you. But really, thank you. So I guess, And I should also give a heads up to the audience. A lot of talking about it because we have a shared experience through parenthood, through surrogacy and IVF that didn't work and all that. So you see a lot of that, my story come out as well for those who aren't familiar with that pathway. So starting with you, Ma, can you just share us a little bit about your upbringing and I guess just some of your family values or experiences that must have shaped your views on motherhood and family?
Thank you so much. I am the first of 6 children.
Wow.
You know, from a home that was full of love.
Mm-hmm.
It was just in that relationship was just my mom and my dad. And so what I've known all my life was love, was the commitment, was focus, was devotion to one family for the same purpose, you know. So we were born and raised in Lagos. And everything I really did, you know, until I had to travel out was in Lagos, until I had to go for my service outside Lagos. Which was like my very first experience of
outside of it. Where was it?
That environment. It was in the north.
Oh.
In the north. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I was happy to go. It wasn't one of those very pleasant places where people like to go, maybe for safety and all of that.
Yeah.
And there wasn't much of a civilization, especially for that part of town where I was posted to. But I mean, I'm very open. I like to travel. I like to see other stuff. You know, it doesn't always have to be pleasant all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So back to my family, we're 3 girls and 3 boys.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, all
in
we
the first,
knew was love, unity.
Mm-hmm.
My father was one man that was so, so unique to my heart. The level of integrity and that which he brought us up with is amazing. Hard work. I haven't seen that kind of hard work before in Nigeria. Not until I traveled out of the country. And you know how it is up here, out here abroad, where people could actually work different shifts and from one job to the other, non-stop, just to make ends meet. In Nigeria, and especially in those days where it wasn't very typical, I saw my father doing that, you know.
Oh, wow.
The way to make sure we have a better life, you know, especially when he wasn't very lucky, you know, to be placed in a comfortable place in the society.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he had to work too hard, you know. We were very happy. I wouldn't say we really lacked anything. We had a lot of love. We had a lot of protection. We had a lot of support, you know. My father passed more than 2 decades away, ago.
He's passed away? Wow.
Yes,
passed wow, I'm so sorry to hear.
Yes, he passed away, you know, and I have a lot of fulfillment because the legacy that he left behind was really worth it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that kept me going. But I just, every time I think about how much work he puts in, that he's not even here to reap the reward of his labor, it breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But overall, my mom is still here, and I'm very, very grateful for that. Presently, I still have my 2 brothers and my 2 sisters.
Yeah.
We are one family.
Did you lose a sibling? Because you were 6 of you.
Yes, I lost a sibling, yes.
Oh, sorry to hear.
Lost a sibling, yes. So, anyway, we're all married.
Yeah.
We can complain, you know. We thank God. We thank God for our lives. We thank God to still have our mom healthy, you know, and happy. So growing up was wonderful, you know. Like I said, what is very important in a home that any child should grow up remembering, or that should be part of that child, was a home that was full of love,
Of
full of
love,
unity, and they had a lot of support. So we had this, and we couldn't have asked for anything else. You know, these are my memories, and it's a wonderful memory, which I'm very happy and proud to share anytime.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Sorry to hear about your dad and your sibling. But it seems that even though your dad has been gone for like 2 decades now, when you talk about him, I can sense the love and just the admiration you had for him. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, I mean, I can feel proud. I can't stop talking about my dad. You know, like in those days, the typical African father,
especially, right?
The type that you see in the kitchen is not the type that is really part of helping the kids, to helping the kids out, you know, taking turns with the cures with the wife and helping. I'm back from work. I'm going to take care of washing the clothes. I'm going to help with pounding the yam. You know, these are some of the memories I have. And it's amazing the kind of man he was.
So whenever I think about my childhood, I always had a sense of feeling that the path to motherhood was going to be different for me. Like growing up, I would tell my mom that I was going to adopt. And I always had a special love for neighbors who were trying to conceive. I don't know. I just always had, I kind of knew at the back of my mind that my path to motherhood was going to be a little bit different. So I'm curious to know about you. Growing up, what was your vision of motherhood like? And do you think it was, what did you envision your journey to motherhood would look like? And was it something you always wanted to be, like a mother?
Yes, of course. You know, especially with how I grew up and where I grew up, in a home full of love, my mom and my dad, and it was always love, it was peace, you know, it was family, you know, it was sharing. I didn't see anything different from that, and that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to grow up someday, get married, and have my children, you know. It's always been my dream. But I remember one time, if I've ever experienced anybody that had issue with fertility, infertility, I remember it was one time when I had to go visit my auntie for vacation. She had this neighbor that never had a child. It was a particular evening, and I think I walked in there. I was very, you know, free with her to go play, just talk and have a little chat with her. And he wasn't in a very good place that evening. And I didn't quite understand what was going on. But when I spoke with my auntie told me that those are challenges, you know, and I felt so bad. And I remember then, you know, I was in the secondary school. I actually did pray. I prayed for her. Please, God, help
also
this
her
woman.
Prayers.
I mean, I didn't know that I will ever have to experience that.
Do you ever know if that person ended up having kids of their own?
My auntie finally left that place, you know, And for many, many years, you know, I've left, we're talking about more than 20 years ago, right? Even that my auntie is not living anymore. But as that's the last time before my old auntie died, my auntie said, oh, they moved away. They moved out of state. I know nothing about her anymore. I was curious. I wanted to know before my auntie died, you know.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. So I guess my next question would be for this. When did you get married? And when did you first realize that conceiving naturally might be a challenge for you?
Okay, so I would say I'm very lucky and blessed when it comes to marriage. I actually got married even before I was ready for marriage.
What does that mean?
So I had this boyfriend, you know, that I never thought that even after I was ready for marriage that he would be ready. So I just had finished my NYSC. Normally we finish in September, right? I just got home and he was proposing. I thought it was a joke, you know. I don't know, used to be somebody that should be ready for marriage in the next 10 years. What, you know? But I mean, I'm just, he was serious. After
Wow.
about three times, I kept, not taking him seriously. I later found out he was really serious. So anyway, long story short, even though I didn't think I was ready then, I thought I'm just done with NYC. I'm gonna go work in some nice office, and then be ready sometime maybe in another 2, 3 years. But I decided to give it a try because I just thought it was a wonderful person. I wasn't sure if I missed him, if I would regret it or not. So I gave it a try. Yeah. And this was sometime in 2005. We got married and he traveled out of the country that same year. And it took about 3 years before I joined him abroad.
Oh, you were married already?
Yes, we were already married.
Wow.
So that 3 years of trying to join him abroad, of course, nothing happened, right? So
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting to get
Pregnant,
pregnant.
yeah.
But after I joined him, knowing that I have spent 3 years, you know how it is in Africa, if you
Yeah.
marry, you find they expect children.
Right
So
away.
after I joined him, I was ready right away. I remember him telling me, "Oh, this country, you have to plan your life. We don't want no children for 2 years until you settle down." To me, it was just what was this one saying?
We're ready.
And I know one day he caught me with
Pregnancy test.
not pregnancy test, just hormones tracking, like he caught me with that and like, "What are you doing? Remember I said no baby for until 2 years?" So I just laughed it and I kept trying. After a while, I decided that I wanted to see a fertility doctor.
Doctor.
And this so that's how it all started. So going
Wow.
to see a fertility doctor, diagnosed me of endometriosis, and that's when the whole journey started.
Started. Now, are you at liberty to tell us what state you were in the US then?
California.
California. Do you think you
Yes.
had, looking back now, do you think you had access to culturally competent doctors who managed you well?
I believe so because I mean people have a success story. The fact that it didn't happen for me, as at the time I wanted it to happen, does not mean that I don't know people
That it worked for.
that have been successful. Yeah, I believe they are good doctors. Yeah.
If you could put into just a summary, like some of the things you guys tried to like get pregnant before we talk about how you eventually, had your babies. What are some of the things that you tried and to what extent did they work for you or not?
So I tried the natural way. That's how it started. And after some time, I decided to see the doctor. And I was told that I have some growth that they need to diagnose after the ultrasound. And when they finally checked it, they said it was endometriosis, and this disease hinders pregnancy and even stops implantation and sometimes leads to miscarriages. So they advised that I should have the surgery, which I did right away. I wanted a baby so fast, bad and so fast. So I was just putting my signature right away to everything. So my first surgery was in 2009, yes. So I had the surgery and they told me that you should try to get pregnant
Right
within
away,
3 months,
yeah.
that this growth comes again after a while. So, and that was what I did, but I didn't get any result. So after some time, I went back to the doctor, and they said, "Yeah, this thing can happen. Now, we think scar tissues might be on the way, and all of that. We will advise that you should start looking at IVF." So that was it for me. Yes, and again, I did not sleep over it. I knew, with IVF is expensive. It's something you just don't jump into. You have to plan for it financially. So I just went into saving mode right away. Working so hard, double shifts, save the money, and with my husband's support. So that was it.
And how old were you at this time, if you're about to share with us?
So, got married at 25, and at this time we were talking 27 when I started this whole journey.
We could actually be twins, because I got married at 25 as well, and I used to have endometriosis. I don't claim it anymore, and it's just funny how our stories are similar. Now, you being in California, I was in Texas, and you know how they do a lot of these policies, like employers in my state were not mandated to provide fertility services, but California being more liberal than Texas, were they still you still had to pay out of pocket for your IVF?
Everything, even the ultrasound, I had to pay
Really?
100% out of pocket. I never had
I
that,
thought California was liberal, like, oh wow, look at me.
Oh, I know. Even up till now, it is only very few jobs that can have insurance that cover that. And most of the time, if you find out, they don't cover 100%.
100%, but at least
So
some support.
it's not common at all. It's not common. It's an expensive procedure, so
Very.
it's not common that you have insurance that covers
That
that. I
covers it,
never had any such insurance. I had to pay everything.
I mean, I guess luckily for me, even though my insurance was very restricted, they allowed for the like the surgeries, they paid for it, the ultrasound they paid for it, but like the treatment itself, luckily for my clinic was able to help with some grants that covered the medications, which was usually the most expensive. And then we also got some discounts. So when we did some of the procedures, it wasn't super expensive. But by the time we started doing frozen cycle, forget about it. But I'm curious to know, like, can you walk us through your IVF journey? How many cycles you did, and if you got pregnant with any of those?
I was looking at where I'll get results. My very first IVF, it wasn't a full cycle. Somewhere along the line, I was told, you are not consistent with your response. You have some of the follicles growing too big, and the
Oh,
other
God.
follicles were too little.
Oh,
You
God.
cannot wait for the other follicle to catch up with the bigger one because the bigger one will rupture.
Oh,
So for
God.
that, we will have to cancel the cycle.
What?
And I was devastated.
Oh, my goodness.
And even with that, this was a procedure that was going to cost about $16,000. Medication is not part of it. Medication,
No,
as I said,
it's not.
was about $8,000 to $10,000. So even with a canceled cycle, by the time they did their math and had everything, I remember I still paid $12,000. And I had already paid for the medication, which was about between 8 to 10,000. So add that up, So that was it. And that was my first experience, So I came back, and because I beat myself up, I didn't get any results. I consoled myself and I started saving again. It took me another 1 year plus. So as at this time, I started going on the web to look for the best doctor that works with patients with endometriosis and all that. And I stumbled into this clinic out of state.
Okay.
One of the expensive states that you can think about in the U.S.
Is it New York or Hawaii?
You are correct. New York.
Is it RME?
I'm New York, Manhattan.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Is it RME?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Never mind. Yeah, okay.
So I decided to take a trip with my husband. Mm. And it wasn't cheap. Everything adds up to that cycle. So if I want to put everything together, that cycle cost me the ticket and the hotel, that cycle was $45,000.
You went through with it?
Yes, I did. Ah. And when I say $45,000, it was cash money. 100% was paid before the procedure started.
Oh, they can't even take you. Oh my, you know, sometimes they'll let you pay like as the stage is going. You know, you can pay for this stage, pay for that stage. Wow.
No, you pay 100% before they even start the procedure. Wow. That's how it's done.
And this is just one cycle, right? Not like repeated cycles involved.
It was one cycle. I mean, because they added up because of the expenses of going out of state, right?
Yeah. But still,
and I didn't only go out of state. I was two trips that I had to make for this particular cycle.
God.
A very long story, which I'm going to try to summarize. So we went, and you know, everything went well. I was responding so well to the treatment. The follicles were impressive. The numbers were impressive, and I remember this particular night, and it gave me a particular injection. I think it was oral
progesterone
injection. Yeah. So they said before midnight, 30 minutes before midnight, we want you to consume it. And by morning, by 7 o'clock, we want you already in our clinic, because what you took is supposed to help us, you have trigger collection. So I took it, and barely 30 minutes after I took this medication, I went into severe pains.
What do you mean by severe pain? I mean, progesterone, you've probably been used to that during all of your other IVF. What was different about this one?
I don't know what exactly. I was in pains, and this type of pains crippled me, like, immediately.
Wow. Endometriosis, we're already in a lot of pain. We're used to pain.
Yes.
So for you to say pain, I imagine that it was a lot of pain.
I have gone through a lot of pains, and when I say pains, whenever my monthly period comes, then in some bad months, I have to be rushed to the emergency room until I had that surgery. So the surgery helped in that regard. So these pains was bad. And my husband was very worried. He was like, I'm going to call 911. I don't want to lose you. What is going on? Don't call them, because if they come, they're going
expenses,
to...
Expenses, yeah.
They're going to disturb this process, you know?
Because it's expensive, too. The cost of the ambulance, yeah.
So don't come, because they're going to take me to the hospital. I'm supposed to have a head
procedure.
In the morning, in a few hours, you know? And he said, like, but of what use it is? If you die, you look terrible. You know, you're not doing well at all. And I was rolling on the floor. I had so much to live for. I wanted to have this baby. I wanted to live for my family, for my husband, for my mom, for my sibling. And if I didn't have all of this to live for, But
What's
the
the
type
point?
of things I was going through, if you had given me two options, to either leave or to go and end the pains, you know, if I didn't have nothing really to live for, I could take that other options to end the pain.
Really?
But we endure, I try to endure until very early hours in the morning, like 4 a.m., thereabouts. And we had to leave the hotel and start driving to the clinic. At this time, we had already called the nurse, and we told her everything that was happening. And they said, okay, start coming. We have to start up early because of you. So we went in there to the clinic. And
was it hyperstimulation? That was what was going on?
Yeah, no, I'll say that in
Okay, sorry.
So, when we went there, what the doctor said was that we already had very matured follicles that were already ready.
Good.
So at the time that I took that medication, some of them ruptured.
Oh my goodness.
So
that was
what was
causing it.
So that was what happened to me.
Shouldn't they have been monitoring that? They were not giving the drugs to use.
They monitored me. They checked. They did an ultrasound even that morning, even before they instructed me to take that medication in the night.
Oh, God.
So, and that was it. I wasn't doing good at all. They had to check me into the emergency room. They were asking for an on-call surgeon to come and do a surgery, clean up, and also do another surgery for endometriosis. Because as of then, the doctor was saying, oh, the endometriosis is so obvious and it has played a part in this.
But you had a surgery right before you did this thing, right, for the endometriosis?
I had a surgery in 2009.
Okay,
this procedure was in 2010. Remember, after 2009, I had tried one other procedure. This was my second one.
Yeah, and then this IVF cycle, all of the drugs can also cause more flares and, you know, flip you up and all that.
So, anyway, I mean, that was it. I was so worried. I wasn't thinking about myself. I was thinking about the eggs, you know, can you save the eggs, the remaining ones, you know, can you retrieve? So they went ahead and retrieved it, sent me to the emergency room. They requested a on-call surgeon to come. He came, looked at me, and said that, well, at this point, that I don't look very fit for a surgery that he said might take up to 10 hours to really clean me up.
And you were still in pain. All of this time, you were still in pain.
Yeah. I was still in pain. When I got to the clinic, they had tried to make it better a little bit with the medication they gave me. They put me on drip right away with in medication. You know, I remember I couldn't walk upright. I was trying to get into the hospital, they had to get a wheelchair because I can't even get up to walk. And that was it. That surgery was not done because of my condition. They had found alternative treatment. The surgery was not done. So I had to come back to California, and we have to schedule an embryo transfer for another time. So going back to New York another time, all of that back and forth made that particular cycle more expensive than any other cycle that I've done. So when I added it up, it was $45,000 and change.
And they didn't even give you any, like, you know, consensus, like, you know, this is just
there,
like,
was
a
nothing
way.
Like that. They had me come back and pay again for transfer. And I said, you know, I've already paid for some of this stuff. They said, well, that didn't happen. This is a new procedure. The only thing you're not doing this time is going through production
stimulation,
you know, and production of egg, but we're still doing Also, son, we're still checking you. We're still prepping you. We're still going to do a transfer. So you still have to pay for that.
And they never took responsibility for that thing that it cost your ovaries to
not
be doing?
No.
That's when America can be quite soulless sometimes.
Yeah, they didn't. And so I came back here. I remember laying on my back for 2 weeks because I thought that was what would give me the
result
then.
Yeah.
I think they must have told me that too, you know, take it easy,
don't do much.
And I never knew you can go crazy to lay on your back and just to rest. Resting non-stop for such a long time, you know. I'm a very restless person by nature. I like to move
be
around
active,
and move forward, you know. So after 2 weeks, I got up and go get a test done, and it was negative. I called the clinic, I think they got the result. Yeah, because when I did the test, they sent it to them.
To them as well.
So they actually are the ones that called me and then said, "Oh, unfortunately, your test result is negative. Blah 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 blah. If you have any question, let us know." And that was the end of it.
That whole $45,000 experiment just gone like that.
Get off the phone. There was no pity,
Welcome to America. I've been there.
That was it. And I don't want to start telling the story of how I had to go through that, you know. But it was hard. It was very hard when you think about the numbers of hours you have to work, the pay period, the time, the patience, you know, in all everything you had to deprive yourself of to save this money. Just to get a very unemotional, unattached phone call one day to say, "Oh, unfortunately, it was negative. Call us if you have any question, and we can start another cycle as soon as you're ready." So that was it. After that, I tried another cycle. Couple years later, after I was up to it, it was negative. That was the third one, right? I tried a fourth cycle that got me pregnant for only about 2 months. I miscarried it for no reason. And about five cycles in a period of 8 years, I think. You know, because it's not something you just get up and go and do. And, you know, over here, too, they have a lot of procedure. They have to be ready for you, registration process. They have to prep you and make sure that it is time. The financial aspect of it, you have to gather the money and be ready. So it takes time. It's not something you just get up and go get it done. It's not like a doctor's appointment or a checkup or a blood work. It's a very long process. It is.
And thanks for sharing that, because I think a lot of people just, when they hear about surrogates, just think, "Oh, you're taking the easy way out and all that." Yeah. And I wanted to just share that story to really make people understand that for us to go through one path, like, it's not like we haven't tried anything. I even forgot to mention, you know, so you have that knowledge as well about, you know, your health and the body as it were. So I'm so sorry you went through all of that. And I can imagine just how traumatizing it was. But thank God that finally you got the result, and you can look back of this story and just, it becomes a story. But I imagine just how traumatic it was then for you.
Yeah, Yeah, then I could say this story and say it and continue saying it another day. But
Yeah.
the joy right now outweighs out all of this
Yeah.
this
Yeah.
pain that I'm
Yeah.
trying to explain. I don't even feel it like that anymore. I used
Yeah.
to feel it in those days. I probably would have broken down. I won't be able to keep talking. It will be so overwhelming. But right
Yeah.
now, my joy is full,
Great.
and
Thank
I
God for
can just
that.
tell this story and make it feel very light, but it wasn't at all.
Yeah,
It's a
yeah.
very deep story.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's what for also for me, I think one of the things that when I was going through my journey did for was it made me pull away from people. And I enjoy people a lot. But after a while I realized that if I let this thing win, I would just become like an antisocial person, which was not in my nature. But this journey can be quite stressful, and there's no way you can even put into words. Even your husband, no matter how loving they are, they can't really understand the gravity of what you're going through.
So for me, would take talking about my husband. I have I'm just blessed with an exceptional husband,
That's great.
and I got very lucky with that, especially with this the journey we're talking about. And as a typical African marriage, African husband, African family, the pressure that comes with that. Of course, their ears will be full of idea, of suggestion, what they're telling them to do, because automatically, whether they know the diagnosis or not, the problem is always the woman, right? So he was wonderful. I just can't thank God enough for him. I can remember every time I broke down crying. There was times that he had to cry with me. Seeing a man cry and cry tears, and you can actually see the tear. And what he says is that it breaks my heart when you cry. Don't cry. I just can't stand it. That was like one of the time I decided I have to control that. So I never did anymore because I didn't want to see him
Go through
breaking down and
that.
crying with
Yeah,
me.
yeah.
So if at all that happened after then, it had to be in secret. I had tried so much to control that. He was always ready to go with me anywhere I want us to go. I found a doctor in New York. I found a doctor in LA. Oh, they want us to come here. Oh, they need your sample. He was never tired. He didn't complain. He didn't listen to what anybody was saying. If by chance I got to know what people were saying, it was like I told them it wasn't my fault. That would be so unfair. You didn't trust it. What if you were my sister? Why will I leave you alone? I'm in this with you, and whatever comes out of this, I'm ready. We're going to do this together to the very end. Those are the words that I heard from him. I got a
That's
lot of
great.
support.
That's great.
Got a lot of support, amazing support from my husband. It can only be God. He was
That's
always there.
great.
He didn't even want me to feel like that. Like,
Yeah.
I was looking for a child for many years. He made me very comfortable in the marriage, and I didn't feel any threat. I didn't feel any pressure. I was actually the one putting the pressure
On
for
yourself,
myself. Sometimes he tells me, your body has gone through a lot. I need you to rest. Can you just rest this year? Don't worry about it for this year. Let's give it another, give it some time. I need you to rest. Gone through too much,
Well, kudos to Mr. We are so thankful for both of you for having each other in your lives, because I imagine with the love you've gotten from your dad, now having that extension of that in your husband, you're so blessed, twice blessed. And then
Yes,
your
I
children
am.
will also get to benefit that love. So it's a love that keeps recycling.
Yeah, all I ask for God to do is to keep us alive.
Amen, amen.
Because they are good. They will
Amen,
be very
amen.
good, by God's grace.
Amen. Amen.
Yeah.
Now let's segue into surrogacy. How old were you when you considered surrogacy? And was this something that, I'm sure at the back of your mind, you know, it was an option, but what made you decide this was the path to really venture into?
Oh, so when I first started the whole process with IVF, I wasn't even getting results, like positive results, right?
Mm.
Then I got to the phase where I was getting results, I was getting pregnant, and in the second to the third month miscarriage, and they, you know, the same thing was they were saying was initially was that endometriosis was stopping interfering with plantation, right? And now what I was hearing was that endometriosis was causing miscarriage. So I had three miscarriages, and by this time a lot was happening to my body, but because of the process I kept doing, I started having like leftover embryo. So when I go to a particular clinic, I go through the process, I don't get results. I just want to go to another clinic and go through the process again. So as at the time I finally decided to have a surrogacy, I already had an embryo in two different clinics that I had to pay for them to store, right? So, but I know that the time was really running out. I had to do something different. I heard about surrogacy. For this typical African woman in me was like, oh, you need to carry your baby. They need to see you carry your baby, especially with everything you have gone through, everything that they have said and all that. They have to really see that it happened eventually. So when I got to this phase in my life, when I knew that the quality of embryo matters, the quality of eggs matters, right?
Yeah.
And as the years goes by, that quality is not as good as it used to be. And wasting it is not a very good idea. So I thought about looking at that option of surrogacy. It was a whole lot to process. You know, how is it going to work? I remember when my doctor in California first talked about it, and I asked, how much is it going to cost me? And they said about 200,000, you know. And that includes
that's dollars, by the way.
$200,000, yes.
For anyone just wondering, it's not naira, it's dollars.
Okay, yes, $200,000. And that includes legal fees, medical fees for the surrogate mom, and all of that. I had came back home and I processed this. And what scared me more was knowing that this process is not 100% guaranteed.
Right.
But I thought about it. This is money for mortgage.
A whole house and some.
Yeah, if I take 200,000 from loan, from wherever, of course, I didn't have that type of cash in my account. If I go take loan, you know, and go pay for this thing, then they end up telling me it's negative. How am I going to pay for it? And for how long? So that gave me a cold feet for some time. And I started thinking of other options and open miracles happen, you know. And I was it for a long time. It took some time again. I tried another circle. that still did not work.
Yeah.
And I knew at that point that I had to go this route of surrogacy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, how old were you when? Were you already in your 30s by now?
Yes. As at this time that I'm talking about, my daughter is about to turn 3.
Mm.
That was like 4 or 5 years ago.
Ago. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was I was already in my early 40s.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. To think that you started when you were 20-something, 25, right?
Yeah.
15 years.
Yes, 16 years as that when I had my daughter.
Yeah.
When I had a baby for the first time. It was really 16 years. But I would say 16 years of trying. Remember, I had to be in Nigeria without my husband for 3 years.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, because you guys, he relocated right after you got married. Okay.
Yes.
Now, let's talk about just the surrogacy component. Like, so you ended up going to Nigeria because it was going to be cheaper. For those who are considering traveling abroad, especially to Nigeria, if they have that shared history, what are some of the things they should look out for in a clinic?
My clinic choice was based on recommendation. And I believe a lot of people that had to take that, to have to make that decision, I would say most of them is probably based on the same way. There might be a few other people that went online and they stumbled into a particular name and decide to research on that name. But I did some research. I couldn't really narrow it down. I wasn't sure. I was kind of skeptical, which is really which. I hope I won't fall into the wrong hands.
Mm.
But mine was based on recommendation and it was based on good result.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And so, like, you know, we pursued surrogacy. The first time around, it didn't work. Our surrogate got had miscarried. We lost the twins at 14 weeks. And that was quite devastating. But by the time we tried again the second time, I carried a lot of the fears, you know. And because this time around, we had like a WhatsApp group with the person we had paid to serve as a liaison between us and the now new surrogate. My husband and, you know, another friend of ours was a nurse. Every time I would wake up and they had chats, I'll be scared that maybe something had happened to the surrogate. So I guess my question for you is in twofold. For would-be commissioning parents, or these are people that are doing the surrogate, not the surrogate themselves, but the parents, you know, of the would-be child, what are some ways to kind of work around the anxieties, especially if you are far away from where your surrogate is located? And I had another question, but I'll let you answer this one first.
So, for me, my mind was racing nonstop. And you know how there's a lot of integrity problem in Nigeria. And I'm sorry to say this, you know, probably doesn't apply to Nigeria alone, but we have people with real life stories of how they were led into something and they were being deceived. And I even know somebody that had gone to Nigeria for the same reason and spent a lot of money, and but was misled. At the end of the day, it wasn't real. So even though I had gone and I saw a physical clinic and I met a doctor and I had, I know somebody that, not somebody that had a positive result, right?
No.
I was still like, okay, what if this surrogacy mom runs away? What if she disappears? What if she takes the baby away? But, you know, a lot of that was still going through my mind. And but at some point, I was trying to be positive. Even though I was not allowed to talk to this person, see the person, know the person, see picture or anything. I was led by faith, and I just was taking it a day at a time. But one thing I made sure I did was to give additional support, you know, just make sure that the surrogacy mom is healthy, because I wasn't sure, even though I was paying so much for the process, I wasn't sure how much they were going to really compensate this woman with, if it would be good enough for her to really take care of herself. Even if she does take care of herself, you know, she might also have some challenges she wants to take care of financially, and might be left with very little to take care of what was necessary, like food and comfort. So I decided to give more, you know, just to make sure the surrogate mom is well, is comfortable and healthy. And I know that that will also produce a healthy baby, right?
Yeah.
So, no, my mind was divided. You know, what if this, what is that? But I would say 60% I was expecting. I was positive. I was expecting a result. And I'm just so grateful to God that that was what happened.
Mm.
At the end of the day, everything works out.
Oh, good, yeah. And that's really, really great. Thanks for sharing that. And so, you know, you have two kids. Like, your oldest, you say, is three? Yeah, and I know your youngest just turned one not too long ago.
Yeah.
Congratulations, yeah. Congratulations. So how has parenting been like for you, given all of the hurdles that you've gotten to this place?
It's very interesting. It's very taxing. It's very interesting. It's very joyful. It's very fulfilling. It's everything. Everything good.
Would you say it was worth it, everything you went through?
Oh, worth it. I mean, like I said earlier on, telling my story now, I can just be very, you know, can be very reluctant. I don't feel that pain anymore. I can't even believe I went through all that. And that's because what I have now outweighs all of that. Even though I would tell you that it was not easy at all. It was very painful. It was very overwhelming. It was very sad.
Yeah.
And, earlier on, you were talking about the different phases you had to go through. Yes, I got through. I went through the phase of withdrawing. I went through the phase of like, oh my goodness, I'm not going to that party. They're going to say, here she comes again, still childless.
Yeah.
You know. So
thank God that he's giving us gladness for all of our sorrows, and we're here to testify about it. Now, I think one of the reasons I also wanted to bring you on the podcast was to talk about a lot of the conversation I hear around surrogacy really stops the book at, you know, surrogacy, surrogates, what to do, what not to do, and all that. But for people like you and I who reside abroad and go back to Nigeria to do surrogacy, there's a critical step missing in the sense of how do you, especially if you're a US citizen, how do you bring your child successfully from Nigeria, for example, also have a country back to the U.S.?
So when I first heard about the surrogacy in Nigeria, because first they told me that that would be my best option after so many negative results and then miscarriages, that I should look into that. And then they told me it was $200,000.
Dollars, yeah.
I knew I could not afford that. Mm. Even if I had to go get a loan, which was possible, what is the guarantee that I will have resolved? And then I heard about Nigeria by chance, and a friend in Canada told me somebody she knows went through it, and I was trying to get information. The lady wasn't ready to share, you know, probably didn't even like that my friend shared that with me. I found about another one somewhere in Houston that was still not ready to talk, even though they shared a number with me. I tried to reach her. She wasn't really ready to share the information. And eventually, I met this lady, and she was in the same boat with me for some reason. And I told her, I remember telling her that I don't know, but there's something in me tells me that me and you, we're going to find a solution together.
Mm.
I told her that. It probably didn't make sense to her. And I tried to tag along with her for some reason. You know, I was so lonely in this. I was so lonely. I didn't really have anybody around me that was going through what I was going through, you know. I was very lonely. So when I found her, I tried so much to tag along, to call her, to encourage the relationship. And then she moved out of California. I was still calling, sharing information. Have you heard about this? Should we try this?
Mm-hmm.
Then she told me, oh, I think I want to go to Nigeria. I have a cousin, you know, that this is what she just did. I'm like, she did? And what is the process? She said, oh, I don't know. They're just in it. The moment I get the information, I will give you. You know, so I kept asking until she got the information. Oh, that's it's not really what people are saying. You have to get a lawyer from US. You have to do this, you know. So the moment I got the right information, that was all I needed. I got contact a referrer. I started talking with a doctor, with a clinic, and I started making plans to travel with my husband. And that was it. And the rest is history. The immigration part was the scary part. I don't want to have a baby that will be stuck in Nigeria. How do I cross over with the baby, you know?
Mm.
But when I got to know about everything I needed, the right information, I got the right link to go do a research from the website. I even sent an email to that Department of Immigration, and I got a response. I knew that I was hooked properly. I made the trip, and as you know, today I'm the one giving other people information about how they can go through this whole process, how they can migrate their baby to the United States.
Wow. I mean, you've highlighted just how lonely this journey can be, even in the midst of many people suffering the same way. And I think that's a very important point, showing that even though there's people around you who are going through that thing, there's a way this journey can further cause isolation. But I'm glad that you haven't even isolated yourself, because now that you've even gotten your results, you're more happy. I mean, if you were to shut the door and just focus on your family, that's so understandable. But you keep reaching your hand of support, and, you know, because you've been such a treasure trove. I mean, as you know, all of our journey, you've been very, very open. And so thank you for that. And my goal now is to just keep passing that along, because you've helped me a lot. And I'm more than happy to keep helping people. It's why I brought you to the podcast, so we can serve as a resource for those who might be considering, you know, this path as well. So thank you so much for being you.
Yeah, of course. You know, somebody at some point had to share the information with me. Otherwise, I probably would still be stuck.
Yeah.
You know, and I tell the clinic, you know, I said, because they have people that they referred, and they talk to the doctor, and the doctor tells them, oh, this is what you do. And, you know, the doctor even had a conversation with me.
Mm.
And he said one thing that made some of them never call me back is oh, what is the immigration process? How will I get my baby? You know, how will this work? And, you know, so I he said, you know, I'm very cool about that. Whenever they ask me, I said, don't worry. Here is Miss Mumba. Just give her a call. She's available to answer all your questions. So I'm very happy to be in the position to help other women find joy, find solution.
Yeah. You and know? One of the things I hope to get after doing this podcast with you is to create like a checklist. And so we're going to start that and share that with you to get, like, for the sake of completeness. And it could be a resource where people can just easily click and download. And it will highlight just the steps that we recommend for getting this done, especially for those of us who might be outside of the country. But I mean, outside of the country, right? Nigeria is the focus here. Now, before you go real quick, let's talk about the embassy side of things. Because even on their website, you know, CRBA, which is, okay, when I talk about embassy, by the way, guys, I'm talking about the U.S. embassy because that's the only country we are dealing with. Now, the CRBA is the Consular for Reporting of Birth Abroad. So, as you guys might know, if you're not familiar with it, U.S. citizenship can be granted in two ways. If you're born in the country, justly is the way to go, meaning born on U.S. soil, you're automatically granted citizenship. At the time of this recording, with the new administration, who knows, anything can change. The second way you can get citizenship when you're outside of the country, right, is called jus sanguinis, which is when if your parent, at the time of your birth, if one of your parents, at least one of your parents was a U.S. citizen, you have that right, but that determination has to be made at the embassy level. So within, I think, 30 days, there's a stipulation. If there's a newborn, so I don't know if it's within 30 days, but you need to notify the embassy closest to you about the birth of your child. And they will call for an interview. They will ask you questions. And there's a checklist. And there's so much to, you know, consider with that. I guess my question for you will be this. For people that are preparing this, you know, for this journey, what are some things they should start preparing for now? Because the earliest you can notify the embassy is when that baby is born. You can't do it before, you know. Yes. But what should they start getting ready? Because there's so many things that I didn't know. And thankfully for you, I would have been a jar of pickles.
Yes. So, I mean, for my case, the moment I started the whole journey, I sent an email when I got the right email address and website. I sent an email and said, oh, we are U.S. citizens, and this is our intention. You know, we had decided to go overseas, to go to Nigeria for this purpose. And the reason is because of the cost we can afford. You know, we have gone through it severally over here, and we didn't get results. But at this point where we are thinking of this other option, we can't really afford the cost here. So I asked these questions in email, and we said, this is what we want to do. You know, we're just letting you know. We want to know, when do we start this application? You know, even though I was already told that you will not be able to start submit application until you have a birth certificate. But I just wanted to start a communication. And I got an email right away saying, oh, congratulations on your journey. And this is the link. Once the baby is born, we need a birth certificate. You need to follow this link. You need to submit all of these documents. So to answer your question, the best way to go about it, you don't necessarily have to send an email like I did.
Yeah.
But you need to go through the website, familiarize yourself with it, know the requirements, start gathering the documents that they need. Because some of the documents, or most of the documents you will need, you need to have it ready even before the baby is born.
Yep.
So if you can get yourself ready, you know, get them into the file the way they want it, it will make it easy. Because once the baby is already here, it can be overwhelming, you know. So you get all the documents and just know that you're waiting for the birth certificate. The moment you get that, you just commit to application. And from experience, that will also help you get a sooner date. The sooner you submit the application, the sooner you get Because over time, because of a lot of Nigerians taking advantage of this opportunity, they seem to have a lot of people. And because of that, tendency that you will have appointment that can take 2-3 months in the future. Has been norms lately.
Yeah.
So you just have to get ready with your documentation. So the moment the baby is born, you can just submit your application. So that way you can get an appointment date.
Yep. And so we are the most recent, you know, surrogate parents, and everything she said, so true. At the time of this recording in February, we just had our interview last month. So for anyone at this stage right now, and you're wondering on how to get a closer date of appointment, you have to email me separately. I cannot share those tips on here, you know. It might work for you, it might not work for you, but there are ways to, like, get, you know, faster appointment. And I want to respect just the thought that went behind it, so I can't share that publicly. But that said, about documentation, now, everything you're doing with the clinic in Nigeria here, the date you approach that clinic, you have to make sure that you have that paperwork. If you visited Nigeria, make sure that you have your passport stamped. So if you're like me, you travel a lot, and your passport, you go through passport like someone that's going through beans and plantain, make sure you keep your passport. Like, you want to see the date you said you came to the clinic in Nigeria, if it tallies with your travel records, right? And then your proof of U.S. citizenship, your marriage certificate, the source of the embryo, was it your husband's partner sperm, your eggs? If it was one of you has to be biologically related to the child. So make sure you have all of that. The surrogacy contract, the memorandum of understanding, proof of payment, all the payments you made to the fertility clinic, to the antenatal clinic, were you present at birth? You know, if not, explain why. And now they might require DNA testing. You cannot do that beforehand. You have to do that. That will be determined at the point of your appointment. And they'll give you an order form to take it to the clinic, to the lab where you're going to get tested. Your proof of physical presence, they want to be sure that you had enough stay in Nigeria. So it could be your tax returns. You can go to your social security website to download your social security benefits, employment records. For children that are older than a certain age, they want to see like photos, like your progression photos as a child to see if that looks like a child. And yeah, and then the fee is not very expensive, like $100 or so for the CRBA form. But they have some other things. I think one of the things that was also helpful for me that made me know was arrange your documents clearly. I had 2 folders, one for the passport application, one for the CRBA. I did everything at once. And then one folder for the original documents, like my birth certificate, my baby's birth certificate, the marriage license, marriage certificates we had, and all that kind of stuff. So make sure you go through their checklist. It's very, very exhaustive. And yeah, but make sure you're documenting all of the interactions you have in the hospital. We hope your clinic is such that provides that kind of documentation. When the positive pregnancy was confirmed, you know, get a letter from that clinic. So these are some of the things. We'll create a checklist that you guys can easily download. But above all, the CRBA website provided by the U.S. Embassy will still be your best bet for at least what they require at the time of the interview. So whatever we send to you is not going to duplicate that. It's just more of a compliment to help you get the best out of it.
Yes, that's very correct. You know.
Yes.
Of course, you mentioned DNA test. Yeah, for sure. Because this category of immigration process is called child of a citizen born abroad.
Yes.
So you have to be able to prove that, you know, and your child will be given a citizenship even before they leave that country of birth, you know. So it's after the whole process, they will issue the child a U.S. Passport.
Yeah.
Before you can travel out with that, your baby.
Yeah. And you have to be very patient, because the time you are trying to hurry out, these people, they take their time. So plan adequately. If you need, one of you will have to take extended leave, maybe to be in Nigeria. I was in Nigeria for 2 months and 2 weeks. And on top of that, we couldn't even get to bring the baby, you know, right away because they required DNA testing, which elongated all of our case and all that. But that's okay. I'm just saying plan ahead of time. You can't be in a hurry for this. And for me, I just thank God. I think the patience I've had from trying to conceive, I just brought it to this phase, like, you know what? There's a baby that came out of this. That's all that matters. Everything else is just going to sort out itself. 1 year from this time, I'm going to look back. I'm not even going to remember all the stress because it's a baby, you know. So I focus on that. Yeah. Before you go real quick, I had a question for you. So, and let me know if this was applicable to you. I guess I've been wanting to ask you this. One of the things that I found strange about this whole, not strange, but new to me was all these years of wanting to get pregnant and praying to God. At the point, I just stopped praying about it. You know, I prayed for other people. I stopped praying about, you know, myself. And I felt like my heart had gone through a process of being calloused, right? So much so that when we finally gave birth to our son and I went to the hospital to see him, and I don't know, my head felt like there's something joyful to behold as far as his presence, but I didn't feel that joy like I wanted it to be. I had to look at my daughter, who had like the purest form of expression. I had to live vicariously through her, and in just having, because I tend to always observe my behavior and, you know, my reactions to things, the only way I could explain what I had gone through was because of all the years of just wanting and waiting. By the time the result came out, I was already tired. Did you ever go through that process? And I guess because also surrogacy is such, it's such an external process. You're not the one carrying the baby. You know, they didn't grow in your whole body. So the biological process is kind of gone. And here you're just trying to do some form of artificial connection. Don't get me wrong, I love my kids. Like, you know, I mean, I will go to war for them. But at that point, it took a while to really get to that place where I felt full joy. Did that happen to you as well?
Yes and no. So I only felt that way during the pregnancy process. Mm. Because even though I knew I was expecting a baby, I wanted to be like the one waking up, you know. And just so you know, when I finally made a decision to go through surrogacy, I actually went for a cycle of my own again to have my personal cycle, right?
At like the same time?
Carry the baby, yes.
Wow.
So, but just because of past experience, I was like, okay, I want to have a baby. This was sometime in the middle of the year. I was like, oh, I want to have a baby by next year. So for that, I don't want a situation whereby it didn't work for me based on experience, and then I will waste this whole year again. Mm. So because of that, when the transfer was done on me, now it was also done on the surrogacy mom. Mm. So, and we both were pregnant.
Oh, wow.
And initially, I was worried about the numbers of babies. It's going to turn out to be a lot of babies. Oh, God. And, you know, I didn't care how I'm going to cope. I remember my doctor asked me, how are you going to cope? You know, it might turn out to be a lot of babies based on the number of embryo that was put in you and in the surrogate's mom. I got pregnant 2 months later, of course, I miscarried. So I was already feeling like I was holding on to something in two places. One in my body and one somewhere else, right? And then when it happened, even though I didn't feel good about it, but it was different this time. Like before, I would feel very empty. Like, oh, it didn't happen. When am I going to start again? But this time, I just felt, oh, it's like I was expecting more, but now I'm expecting less. But I'm expecting something at the end of the day. So that's why my feeling was different. I was still feeling attached.
I see.
Sometimes my mind tells me, oh, yeah, you might feel like, oh, the pregnancy didn't work, but you can, in a way, you're still pregnant. So I wanted to really be part of the delivery process. And I arranged with the doctor and the clinic that I want to be in there. And they permitted me. So I was in there. I saw my daughter being brought out and was handed over to me like almost right away. And from that moment, I was very involved emotionally, spiritually, and everything. So, yeah, that's why I said yes and no. I just only felt like I should have had more babies.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen that way. But I still ended up with a beautiful baby girl anyway.
Mm. Wow. Congrats on that. And sorry to hear about the loss you experienced.
Thank you.
I guess as we round off, and I think I'm done with my other one, I feel like I can just keep talking to you over and over again. I guess my final question will be this. I feel like surrogacy as a whole is something we don't get to talk about, you know, and I want for that to be changed, especially amongst, you know, Africans. How do you think we can begin to change that narrative? Getting people just comfortable talking about it or being more accepting? I don't think acceptance is what my goal here. It's just understanding that people's pathway to parenthood might be different.
So I just think what is more important is people to be able to educate themselves and to be open and to look at what has changed and what is possible. So a lot of people don't know, or they don't want to know, they don't care to know, or they don't require to know, they don't research to know. They still think, is what magic are they talking about? How possible is this? You know, when I finally decided to do this, I knew I wasn't owing anybody any explanation. I knew I wanted to satisfy myself and fulfill my desires. And I didn't have to explain. There are certain people that I will not even try to start explaining to, because there is no way they will understand where I'm coming from. Some just think you went to get one baby from somewhere, or some just think, oh, she went to go and adopt and she just doesn't want to be open about it. So I can try to give information to the people that I know, you know, understand what I'm trying to say in the first place. But ultimately, is to educate yourself. Understand what time is it. Understand what is going out, is going on out there. What is the process? What is the possibility? How can it happen? Educate yourself with that. So that way you will understand if any woman comes and say, oh, I have a child through surrogacy, you understand that, yeah, this is their children, it's possible. And there's a lot of information out there. If you don't even know, you can still ask to find out how is this process done, you know. So that's what I have to say. I just feel like some people had already close their mind about what is possible. You know, they just feel, which is very ignorant in a way.
Yeah.
If you don't really understand and you're already judging and concluding, and this is what will make a lot of people out there just, you know, oh, thank God I got what I wanted, you know, I don't want people to know. And that's why a lot of people will even go to the point of having a fake pregnancy, deceiving people that they're actually carrying a baby because they don't want the society to judge them or judge their child, you know. So I don't know if that answers your question.
No. I mean, you said it all. I think just giving space for people to be able to share themselves. And also, if you're in a position considering this, asking questions, and there's so many resources out there. You know, we can't claim ignorance, right? And this is why we're also doing this podcast, to serve as a resource to share those experiences. Now, as you go, for people who are currently in the situation you were in, you know, we were in, struggling with infertility and maybe considering surrogate, but they feel so overwhelmed, what kind of advice would you like to give them for anyone struggling with infertility at the moment?
Well, one thing that never gave me result was being sad, crying myself out, and trying to give up. I never got any results from that. Instead, I got a lot of headache, I got allergies, and I felt I let myself down and all of that. So I just would say that there is hope. There's a lot of hope out there. Reach out to the right sources, get information, plan ahead, and see how you can get results. Don't give up. It is only natural as human to feel down, but whatever phase you are, don't let that consume you if that is not what is supposed to give you the result of what you want. And I thank God for just like what you are doing, trying to create awareness. And then we have women like me and you that are ready to share their story and give information that will help other women. So look out there, you know, for people like us, for right sources where you can get information and go about it. Don't say, oh, it has to be done the natural way, I know, because they will say this, they will say that. You don't owe nobody anything. At the end of the day, when you get the result, you will be so happy you did. You know, I mean, life happens. I believe every one of us always wanted to sleep and wake up and feel sick and go to the clinic, and then the doctor says you're pregnant, you know. That's what we all wanted, right? You know? But if it didn't work out like that, let's just always be grateful that we are even alive.
Yeah.
And let's take the other options. I mean, I believe that even the science behind it, that God made it possible. If he didn't make it possible, they will not find this. They won't discover it. Yep. God made it possible to help women like me that happen to find themselves in that situation. God made it possible so they can be solution. So use it. Don't beat yourself up, said, God didn't give me, if it didn't happen that way, it means God didn't want to give me, or, you know, people would say this, people would say that. At the end of the day, it's your life, it's your child, it's your joy, you know, it's your fulfillment.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And that said, you know, even with surrogacy, it doesn't mean it's going to work. Like, I shared our experience. The first time we did it, we lost twins. And it took the second time trying it. So it's not like if you do it, it's going to work. It just shows that it's a process. Okay?
Yes, it's all a process.
It's
still something that is genetically related to you and all of that. So it's still a process. The only sure thing you can talk about is just walking to maybe a hospital and getting a baby that you adopt, you know, you can say, that one for sure, we have those babies available.
Yeah.
And once I qualify, I will get it, right? You know, but it's still a process that can happen, and, you know, they can be miscarriage, they can be negative pregnancy tests.
Anything can happen.
Yeah, but I could tell you that, you know, if you decide to take that route, you know, you're just closer to getting your results.
Yeah.
Just like you, it didn't work the first time. You tried again.
Again, yeah.
And it worked.
It worked, yeah.
Life. It's like writing an exam. You write it the first time, you didn't get the score you wanted. If you don't go back to write it again, you will never get the score you wanted, right?
Thank you so much. I'm done with all of my questions. I don't know if there's some things you wanted to say before we close out this episode. I'd like to give you the opportunity to do that.
Well, I just want to encourage all the women out there again that have to find themselves in this situation. I think some of the most difficult stories I have heard will be that they didn't have a very supporting husband. So I want to reach out to husbands out there, especially African men. I want to let them know that there's 101 and more reason why a woman can have infertility problem. There's so many reasons. The reason is not what a lot of people assume ignorantly. There's so many reasons. It could be anybody. You know, like I said, my mom was one woman that didn't have to struggle. She was like giving birth every year or every other year, you know. And I, the women in my family, I don't remember anybody that has challenged, you know. But that does not mean that I am unique or there was something wrong with me, you know, spiritually or otherwise, or the way I was created as what God designed me to be. But it could happen, you know, it could even be in the process while you are growing up, your body system might just change, or, you know, so many things can happen. So I'm also, as I encourage the women, that if you ever find yourself in that situation, there are solutions and there is hope, right? I want to also encourage the husbands, try and work things with your wife. Don't say, oh, because I don't have time to go through this, I'm going to move on to another woman. Just know that it can be any woman. It can be your daughter in future. It can be your cousin. You know, just try and see. There are solutions out there. See how you can work things with your wife and be patient, so that way you can get results.
Thank you for that. I mean, I love your message to not just the women, but also the men and the support that they can bring to their wives. Because even with the best of support, some women still find this journey quite lonely. So how much more those that don't have support? So please, let's stay in unified voice and support our spouse as they go through this. I know as women, we tend to put ourselves through a lot because I'll put on so much weight. The flares will be so bad. I'll be in so much pain. It wasn't like a really good time of mine. And my mental health was just going down the drain, you know, with every attempt that wasn't working, right? And with endometriosis, they'll tell you every time you're treating endometriosis, you're preventing pregnancy. So if you're allowing yourself to get pregnant, you're not getting treated for the endometriosis, which causes you a lot of pain. So my doctor would tell me, choose one. Do you want to get better as well with your endometriosis or you want to get pregnant? Because you can't have both of them at the same time. That was the people I was in,
That brings me to this, you know, because of endometriosis, you are also trying not to inflame it, to become too big. And I had a situation where a friend had offered me a particular medication and said, this work magic, you know,
it is.
And I took the medication and I went through the ingredient in it, and it's saying that somebody in my situation shouldn't take that because it's going to inflame.
Can you imagine?
And I couldn't take it. These miracle pills that would have probably worked for me, you know, because I don't want it to result into a serious health issue that I might not even be alive to give birth to that baby. I'm sure that person will be wondering, but did she really want a baby? I thought I gave her a medication that does magic and she's
and
not
she didn't use it.
So that's another thing, you know, it's crazy, the treatment, the weight that I'm just beginning to try to manage, to reduce, you know, right now, the weight, you know, it just stays there. Before, I'm struggling with one weight and having another treatment that is making me even bigger. So, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot, but don't let that discourage you if you're a woman listening to me and you're thinking about it. Don't let it discourage you, because at the end of the day, when you have your children,
it doesn't matter anymore. You know
that really worth it.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I mean, this is going to be very, very resourceful to many people listening to this. Now, as we bring this episode to a close, I just want to remind you all of just the profound strength, grace, and determination it takes to turn one's life's challenges into transformative victories. And I strongly believe that Ms. Journey through infertility and surrogacy is not just a story of becoming a mother. It's a testament to hope, to faith, to patience, and the unyielding love. She talked a lot about love, you know, from her dad and what she now gets from her husband and what she's trying to recycle with her kids and all these things that define her parenthood. Strongly also believe that her courage to navigate those uncharted territories, you know, face those societal misconceptions, not giving up, embrace an unconventional path to motherhood, can offer inspiration to anyone walking a similar journey or simply striving to persevere through life's trial. So if you are listening to this, if you are facing your own challenge, we hope that her story reminds you that hope is never lost, that community and faith can carry you, and there's light on the other side of even the darkest moments, and that your path might be different, being able to embrace what that might look like and creating that path. So thank you so much for joining us in this heartfelt conversation. We hope that this episode brings you understanding. It challenges your own stigmas around, you know, these issues around infertility, surrogacy. And we can build a world where every family's journey is celebrated. Until next time, take care of yourselves and each other. I remain your host now. Bye for now.